Welcome to Equiosity, the podcast about all things equine, with a special emphasis on the horse-human bond. My name is Alexandra Kurland. I'm the author of Modern Horse Training, a Constructional Guide to Becoming Your Horse's Best Friend, and many other books and DVDs about clicker training. And I'm joined by Dominique Day, one of the co-founders of Kavalia. This is part two of a four-part conversation with Svenja Sawinski. If you are a regular listener to the podcast, you know Dominique and I frequently talk about topics that come from the coaching sessions that are part of my online clinics. And that's very much what led to this current series that we're doing with Svenja. Svenja is one of the regular attendees at these coaching sessions. Last fall, we were looking at some video Svenja had sent in which she was doing some body work with her horse, Darian. Dominique was fascinated by how long Darian could go between clicks while remaining seemingly very settled and very relaxed. He wasn't anxiously trying to figure out what it was that he was supposed to do to get clicked and reinforced. He was just so settled, so relaxed. And this sparked a long discussion over whether or not to use the marker signal during bodywork sessions. And for Darian, it was clearly working. But at the same time, Svenja couldn't tell us how this superstar stillness and relaxation had developed. She had to go away and think about the steps that had gotten them to this point. And then several weeks later, after the coaching session, Svenja sent me a long email describing the process that she used to very systematically teach relaxation to Darian. Last week, I had Svenja introduce Darian. I wanted you to understand that this is a complicated horse, that he did not start out as one of those straightforward, easygoing horses where, you know, of course he's relaxed. No, Darian is very much that type of horse that can very easily become frustrated and can very easily overwhelm a handler. In other words, he's a very good teacher. And Svenja has been a very good student. So together, they have a lot to share. Because when you're working with an animal that is as large and powerful as a horse, being able to ask for calm and knowing that you can get it reliably is a huge piece to add to the training puzzle. Last week, we ended with how Svenja began to expand the duration of Darian's standing in stillness to a Grand Prix level of waiting. And we all know that you can be waiting, but not be relaxed. Think about how anxious you get when you're late for work and maybe you have a bus to catch and the bus is delayed. And you may be fidgeting and fussing and you're looking at the traffic every few seconds to see if you can spot the bus. And you're anything but relaxed. You may be sitting on a bench or standing still with your feet not moving, but you're anything but relaxed. That's not Darian. He knows how to settle and deeply, deeply relax. And this week, Svenja is going to describe the systematic teaching process that taught him how to reach this state, how to settle and relax. You know, will you stand still while I run my hand over your neck? Yes, click and treat. Will you stand still while I run this brush over your shoulder? Yes, click and treat. You know, you're using the behavior to expand the behavior.
You're so right. And that's why I said in the beginning, I was not planning on building this, but I do think I was very systematic about it. Because again, otherwise I would have gotten
a mess.
Frustration behavior.
Yes.
So, yeah. So grooming is a good point. And the other one I pointed out was hoof trimming, which is something we do very frequently. So every about 5 weeks. And he needs to stand still for that. And he's just getting treated like a lot during that time. But let us reach that point in a moment, because Dominique was asking about the systematic teaching of that relaxation.
Yes.
So one thing I started to teach very early when he was about 3 as well was to relax his legs into my hands. Because he was, whenever you would pick up his feet, he would pull them away. And even today, he still has a tendency for that. But I do think it has a body,
Component.
a reason within his body as well.
Yes.
So picking up his feet was never the problem. Having them in your hand without him pulling was. So I started to wait for him to relax the tension. So I have the hoof or the leg in my hand, and I have a direct connection to him, and I can feel
Yes.
when his foot is becoming a little bit more heavy, when his muscles relax, and I would click that moment. And for that, I did build a longer duration. So there I was systematic. I was looking at first it was just a very short relaxation. I would click and treat, and then I would wait a little bit longer and see if he could like keep his leg relaxed in my hand a little bit longer. I then started to rest the leg on my own leg, so it's not just my hand, but it's really much easier for me to hold as well. And then we worked our way into some duration on relaxation of the muscles. That was very systematic. That's also something I try to use with my hoof trimmer, for example, that I ask her to tell me when he's particularly relaxed or if it's a good moment to click. But also what I notice is this relaxation, I click that in the standing still behavior as well. I'm just looking for different signs. So when we're talking about the hoof that is resting in my hand, there's a very direct connection and I can feel what is happening
Right.
in the horse's body. But apart from that, as I said, when we're waiting for something, for example, it's not just the standing still I'm clicking. I'm looking for those signs where the head is lowering a little, where the facial muscles relax a little more. And I always have that in the back of my head without really looking for happy faces or like really the ears forward. I always tend to reward the signs that tell me there's relaxation there.
Yes.
Does that cover what you wanted to ask about, Dominique?
Yes. I think that's very interesting. To, in other words, to teach and reinforce relaxation.
Yes. And it's, yeah, like re releasing tension of
Really?
the muscles. And I started out with his feet, but this pretty much directly leads us to body work because I'm
Yes.
using the same thing, well, for grooming, for example, as well. So if I'm using a brush and I know he's not that keen on being touched, actually, I will wait. Or I will systematically look for signs of relaxation when I'm grooming him and click those and not click when he's tensed. And I will, like every time he tenses, I will take that as a sign to stop what I'm doing and think about what do I need to rearrange so that he's able to keep that relaxation. And that includes, so that's grooming and that's hoof trimming in a general sense, but it also is when I'm touching his tail and moving that around, for example, I will wait for that relaxation in the tail and I will click for that. And I will usually not go there and move the tail around, but I will touch the tail, click for a relaxed horse. And I will always, every time I will do something with one of his body parts, I will do that slowly and wait for the relaxation, which makes him relax longer and more easily every time I repeat that. It also comes back to the one of our cues for standing still is that I'm clicking for standing still. So whenever I start doing this kind of body work, I give a lot of treats for the relaxation so he knows there's nothing she actually wants me to guess right now. She really just wants me to stay here and not do anything.
So
So
he's not trying to figure out the puzzle.
no.
Oh, no.
That was my question, because I, you know, when I was looking at him, I thought, how does he know that the reason why he's not getting reinforced is not that he should be looking for another answer, but that it is only to just stand there and relax? How does he know the difference? And your answer was, well, I build that over a long period of time. And you're explaining now to us how you did that. But that was my big question when I saw it, because I thought, and of course, you can't expect a horse, because the when you start clicker training, they're always trying to figure out how to get you to click. And so it's, as Alex always says, it's a teaching process. If you want them to be reinforced for relaxation, you have to teach it. And I think these are great examples of how you can get there.
And it's so one thing is the you we were looking at this video in summer. So you were looking at least 7 years of reinforcement history, which is why it took me a while to figure out what did I do to get here, which is like it's one of those things, Alex, you have a word for that, superstar behaviors or Grand
Oh,
Prix,
yes,
like
the yeah.
you know, it's not a Piaf he's able to do, but this conversation was something that led me to realize these 7 years of very, very systematic standing still and doing grown-ups history is what makes this so cool.
Yes, he is a superstar at standing still. You have Grand Prix level standing still. And I'll
Relaxed.
just relaxed. Yes. So, and I'll just add a couple of things into this mix that I want to highlight. You adjusted your behavior based on what you were getting from him. So you did not insist on, I am going to continue what I exactly how I'm doing this, and you will figure out that the way to get me to click and treat is to relax. You saw that what you were doing was creating a bit of a disturbance. You made an adjustment. Because you made that adjustment, he was able then to settle and relax. So you didn't just continue on with what you were doing, you were responsive to him. And that's a critical piece of this. It's a critical piece of good training.
I want to jump in there because I think you started to touch on the third piece I've been mentioning about this. I click for mistakes. I will never, yeah, I think I'll say never. I will, at least if I can, if I have myself under control, I will never let him guess for too long. I will rather click a mistake. Then go into an exercise that we both know, or into a break, which is also something we build very systematically, which will not cause negative reinforcement situation for him. But I will click for a mistake, and then I will figure out how to rearrange what we just did. I will not click for mistakes more than twice in a row. Then I
Okay.
will actually go into a break because I know he's a very, very easy learner because he's very skilled. Like, he has learned that a click means information.
Yes.
So if I click something more than twice, he will have learned that and starts putting it into his repertoire. But I will click for mistakes, and I will click for not 100% or one. Last time I had 100%. Now I need 110 to start clicking for it. But I adjust to him, and I adjust the training environment when he makes mistakes, which is a very important piece. So I know this can be confusing for horses if you're not clear about what you're rearranging and how you're following up on this situation. But it's, in this case, it's very, very critical, because I have a horse that does not get into an extinction burst so fast because he does not start guessing. I will always take him by the hand and say, you know what? It doesn't matter. You're a great horse anyway. Whatever you do, you're doing wonderful. And now let me show you what I actually wanted.
Yep.
And that creates...
I really love this conversation, because I think this is where we need all the nuances. You know, we hear things like defense click, the one click that will muddy everything. And yet... And this is why I think there are so many nuances to add here, and I'm sure I don't have all of them, but I know, and the horses will usually tell us, you know, whether this click was a catastrophe, and you know, you can bring them back. But I know for me, the way I see it when I have done this, because I have done this too, where someone could look at it and say, well, she's clicking a quote mistake, but for me, I'm clicking for the horse staying in the game. There's something that the horse is doing that is clickable. And so it's not so much that I'm clicking the mistake, but I'm clicking the other thing that I like. He's staying with me. And like you said, you know, you're immediately assessing and rearranging so that you don't click two times in a row, and then it becomes, you know, this was what I was clicking, the mistake. But I love this conversation, you know, and I wish we could have a behavior analyst to go in depth into this, because, you know, like you say, there's clicking for a mistake, there's not clicking at all, and then your horse is going into an extinction, and everything in between.
Yeah, and what and makes the difference between, because defensive clicking is not good. That's where you keep clicking and treating to keep unwanted behaviors from happening. And when you see handlers who are doing that, you're usually on a really slippery slope to a sliding down into a mess. But that is not what you were describing at all. But part of what you're saying is that the responsibility, the burden of making sure that things are right is not on the learner, it's on the teacher. So if you see him making quote unquote a mistake, the rat is always right. So he's presenting that behavior for a reason. It's not what you were expecting or wanting, perhaps, but the responsibility for making the change is yours, not his. It's when we stay too rigid and don't make those adjustments that you start to see the extinction behavior, the emotional behavior that then leads us to defensive clicks because we're trying to keep bad things from happening. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good point. So I agree with Dominique. I would love to have someone that is a lot more knowledgeable about the things that are happening than I am, because I can say clearly what I'm doing works.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I could not just recommend someone else, you know, whatever your horse is doing, just click, because, you know,
right.
That's how you get superstar standing still. No, it's not. But I think you have got a point, Alex. That's really interesting. So usually those clicks, those defensive clicks, they happen when the horse is already starting to show emotional behavior.
Yes.
And what I'm trying to do is to change this situation before I, like, with those really, really subtle signs.
Yep.
And I was not there. I couldn't do this with any other horse. I just know him really, really well by this point. But I feel like the difference really is, and that's why I'm saying I'm taking him by the hand and I'm saying, you know, you're great, whatever you're doing. Because before I was looking at, I'm missing the word now, a performance. I was looking at the outcome and I was looking at the horse. And if I'm waiting for that, I'm waiting too long and I'm getting emotional behavior. I'm getting frustration. I'm getting extinction behavior, which is in this horse dangerous for me, because he will not just quit and leave me. And okay. that would be like, you know, no harm done. I'd be frustrated because my training doesn't work, but I would not be in danger. So in this case, I had to learn to really listen to those subtle signs. So do you know, because that's something I always have in my head, you know, Eva Bertesson and Emily Johnson-Wade?
Yes. Yeah.
So they are dog trainers, dog agility trainers, for like anyone who doesn't know them. And they have kind of three stages. So I'm probably not explaining this right, but they say it's first attitude for a behavior, then it's direction, and then it's precision. And what I'm like with this superb teacher, Darian, what I'm always looking at is that my attitude layer of anything that I'm doing stays where I want it to be. I want a relaxed horse that is confident that his reinforcement is available when he's around me, and that knows how to reach that reinforcement.
I remember reading in their agility book that when the dog makes a mistake, they do reinforce and they continue. They don't even stop. They go to the next obstacle, and they are reinforcing the dog for staying in the game. I remember reading that in their book, and I had thought, oh, that's very interesting, you know, that they would not stop the game and, you know, eventually.
And reset, yeah.
Yeah, eventually they will, like you say, they will go to the precision, and we know they're quite successful. But I thought it was an interesting concept, the idea of, you know, reinforcing what we think is a mistake, which in a way, like you said, is just that they haven't met the criteria that you had in your head that time around. But it's a complex topic, I think. And, you know, I liked in your email because you said, I want him to know that he's always making the right choices. When you were talking about that you were reinforcing mistakes. So you're saying to the horse, you're making good choices. And we all know as a learner how that makes us feel. You know, when you're trying to learn something and you're encouraged by your teacher, it feels good. You know, it feels like you want to stay there and you want to get better.
That's a good point to say as well. So I have a child who's 5 years old now. And just imagining a situation, you know, when I'm trying to teach her something and I keep saying, you know, that wasn't good enough. Just start all over again. No, let's, that was an okay try, but let's start over again. That is something that builds frustration because there's no fluency there. You keep being reset while trying, but not really, like, even if there's some small reinforcement happening, it's something that can feel very interrupting to the flow of things.
And punishing. How to build low self-esteem in one easy lesson. Oh, I can never be good enough for my mother. I can never satisfy her is really the scenario you're describing. And you just, it's sort of one of those gut tightening kind of scenarios. Yeah.
And it's not that resets are not good. I think we just did we just do a podcast on that?
Yes. No.
How to make sure that they are not punishing and how you can, again, go through a teaching process to make sure that it's just part of the dance. So maybe we should refer people back to that one. So it's not to say that resets are bad, but I think.
But there's a difference between what Svenja was just describing of, oh, no, that wasn't quite good enough. That's not what I was expecting. Go do it again. No, that wasn't good enough. Go do it again. Versus teaching a dance step of go a little bit forward into the behavior, now reverse out of it. Go a little bit forward into the behavior, now reverse out of it. And all of that is reinforced and taught systematically. Then you have access to resets, and you have access to a reset process that the animal, the learner, human or horse, does not regard as, oh, I can never satisfy my person. It's just part of the dance.
Yeah, and if you once you've had that quote unquote mistake, like you said, it's your responsibility to be the architect of the next iterance and to make sure that, you know, you either go back to where your horse was already successful, you diminished the number of seconds you're asking, whatever, you do reset the exercise.
I was wondering the same thing. So we're looking at, the starting question was, how do you reach that you can do body work while using food reinforcement? So what we were talking about now was how to teach standing still with generalization and duration. And we talked about the piece of relaxing into my hands, really. What I didn't mention there was we also taught the Feldenkrais hug, which was very difficult for the two of us because he does not like to be touched. And in that exercise, I put my hands on his nose and his chin, and we are very tightly connected. And he should relax into my hands instead of pulling away or pushing against that. And I have to keep my own body under control, because if I start pushing or pulling, even if I'm not doing that consciously, he will start not wanting to be touched. So that was one of the exercises we taught also, I think, about 2 years ago. And that's the relaxation part. And then we talked about the third part, which is, I'd call it clicking for mistakes, clicking for attitude, okay. Clicking so for, yeah.
Before we jump away from the, we'll call it the awareness hug, which is very much in my mind connected to the Feldenkrais work, because if you've got a lot of tension in your body, you're not going to be able to feel the nuances, these subtle changes that are occurring that we are looking for, because it's not just, well, let me hang on to your face until you let go of some of your, you know, you're looking for nuances. But there's a horse in particular that I'm thinking of right now, because I don't want to create the impression that, you know, you're going to have to wait 7 years and work really hard on creating Grand Prix stillness before you can do body work with a horse and use a marker signal, because I have clicked and reinforced for what we call bodywork changes, the release of tension on horses that were brand new to clicker training, and used it as a way to access, to open up the clicker training for these horses. So they had zero history of standing in stillness for a click in a tree. They had zero history with clicker training, and they had very problematic training going into the process. I've also, one of the horses that I'm thinking of, and I wrote about this horse in my blog, the clickercenterblog.com, and he was a very ear-shy horse. And I started with the awareness hug, but it starts out as body part targeting. You know, I'm teaching it as body part targeting. So this was a horse who also did not want the contact, did not want to be touched. But when you're using the body part targeting, the way that I teach it, and there are many ways to teach everything, but this is generally what I do. On this particular horse, I wanted to be able to put my hand over his nostril. And so I said no. So I'm presenting a verbal cue, and I don't use a lot of verbal cues, but in this instance, I was using a verbal cue, and it basically, I'm announcing what I'm about to do. And then I reached over, put my hand over his nostril, and took my hand away. So I was in and out before he had a chance to react. And I always think of it like the difference between putting your hand on somebody's shoulder versus flicking a bit of dust off their shoulder, or flicking a fly off of a horse. A horse is not going to react to you if you move your hand and just flick a fly off of his shoulder, but he might react to you if you move slowly and left your hand on his shoulder, because now he's thinking, oh, what's this about? But if you're in and out, you're leaving him with complete information. So this is partly how I tend to think about this. So if I could reach through the computer screen right now, Svenja, and put my hand on your shoulder, you might think, well, you know, it's a little weird, but it's, you know, it's okay. But if I left my hand on your shoulder and left my hand on your shoulder, you might start to think, you know, I don't know what this is about. And you'd squirm out from under me and leave. So when you leave before I can take my hand away, you are leaving with incomplete information. You don't know what I was intending to do. Was I going to just leave my hand on your shoulder, or was I going to reach up, grab your ear, and, you know, tweak it? You don't know, because you left. But when I just flick a little bit of dust off your shoulder, piece of shavings, whatever, and I'm in and out, you have complete information. So when I reach over and put my hand over that horse's nostril, I'm not lingering. It's nose, reach my hand across, go away. And I might not even initially, depending on the horse, I might not even make contact with the horse. It may just be the movement of my hand in and out. And then gradually I can slow my hand down to the point where I can now leave my hand over his nostril. And what I'm looking for, what I'm going to click and reinforce, is when I feel him exhale. So I know that I am going to get a clickable moment, because he is going to breathe. Even if he's tense and holding his breath, he is at some point going to breathe. He's going to exhale, and I can click and reinforce that. So I know that within a reasonable period of time, I'm going to get a clickable moment. And from there, I can just expand that and build the teaching of releasing, teaching of relaxation. Out of that, I'm going to click and reinforce you for taking a breath. And that can be a really powerful place to start when you haven't got the long history of building standing in with relaxation that you've built into Darian. So it is possible with certainly it is possible with many horses to find a starting place, a way in that is not as dependent on this long history that you have with Darian. However, having Superstar standing in relaxation is a wonderful thing to build. And I'll ramble a little bit more. I think one of the easiest things to teach if you are a correction-based trainer is standing still. And we're not talking relaxation right now, Dominique. We're just talking 4 feet, four on the floor, standing still. Because what the horse learns really quickly is if I move my feet before I'm told to move my feet, they will get after me. The safest thing I can do is to just stand still. And so it's really very easy to teach if you are willing to escalate pressure. You move your foot, I'm going to nail you. With clicker training, it's much more of a project because we're reinforcing action, movement. We even build stillness out of movement and actions. Now we are reinforcing actions. And when Darian is holding his, looking straight ahead at 12 o'clock, that's an action, the dead horse rule. Anything that, if a dead horse can do it, it's not a behavior. So there is muscle activity that is involved in finding that place of stillness and that place of deep relaxation. So in teaching stillness with clicker training, with positive reinforcement, it is much more of a process. So, when I teach the grown-ups are talking, please don't interrupt, which is a lesson of stillness, I begin it a little from a different base from the lesson that you described. I begin with a place of stillness where you are standing really, really close to the horse so that when you click and treat, there's not a great deal, there's no time for the horse to be responding. So we have that piece in common, but, first we'll establish that, you're really staying in stillness. And then I begin to have the handler take that half step away, another half step away. So it begins to build out into the ground tying, that ability to move around the horse and have the horse in stillness. But it's taught systematically. It is a process. And to really build it so it is a solid behavior, that occurs over time. It does not occur, 5 minutes, the horse understands, forevermore I will stand in stillness and go to sleep. It is a process.
In a way, the low rate of reinforcement is encouraging relaxation at a certain point, I think. Because if you were constantly reinforcing, I'm not sure you would have that kind of relaxation, because usually we say, low rates of reinforcement will create frustration and blah, blah. Well, again, it depends.
I have to share a quick Panda story. So when Panda was in training with me, one of the things that Panda had to learn was to stand next to a chair for long periods of time, because as a working guide, that was part of her job. And it would be really good if she would just stand next to the chair and fall asleep. So while I was building out the duration of, you can just stand next to my chair and you're not looking for anything, you don't have to be actively doing, we're not doing body part targeting, we're not doing any of those things, you can just stand next to the chair and settle. And so as I would see her head and neck drop and her eyes get a little, go to the lids going to half mast, I would click and treat, and she would wake up and startle, and I'd give her a treat, and then I'd let her, she'd start to immediately, her head would drop down, and I would click and treat, and I was thinking, how is this ever going to work? But what was so interesting is through this process, I taught her to fall asleep. It was really fascinating.
Yeah, interesting, so, because you think, how am I going to teach her to sleep if I wake her up all the time?
Yeah. And I, you know, and I remember so clearly as I was doing this, sort of with this question in my head going, how can she ever truly fall asleep if I just keep startling her back with a click and a treat? And what was so fascinating for me was to see her. There was a point where I just knew, you know, okay, we've got it, leave her alone. And she, within seconds, was sound asleep. I had clicked her into sleep, clicked and reinforced her into sleep.
And this story brings us back to the how can you do body part targeting if you keep tensing your horse when you click and feed, right? Mm-hmm. It's but what you're actually, and I think this is where both stories really connect. You're teaching, it's a behavior to fall asleep, it's a behavior to relax, and you have to actively do something to do that. And actually the horse is guessing, like, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm pretty sure the horse is guessing about what is it that makes her click. But the solution is, oh, I need to relax those muscles. I need to halfway close my eyes. I need to lower my head. I need to start showing that behavior that makes me really relax.
Yeah, and feel really drowsy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she gets better and better at going into that, oh, I could just fall asleep right now. Yep. Oh, there's a bit of, oh, let me just, you know, drowse off. And oh, there's another treat. And let me, oh, really drowse off. And now all of a sudden she's asleep. It was fascinating. It was absolutely fascinating to me that I could actively teach her to fall asleep.
Is it, I can only emphasize that. Is it because in those cases, we do not click, no, we do click for performance, but our performance criteria is looking at those signs of relaxation?
Yeah, all those behaviors that she would be presenting as she is nodding off, I was reinforcing.
And it's the performance you're looking for. It's just that looking at the behavior that will show you a certain, well, emotional state.
Yeah. Can't you say that relaxing is a performance?
Depends on whether that's what you want to have.
I mean, you can feel the muscle relaxing. You could, you know, it's,
but
everybody would agree if they felt what you felt in your hand, everyone would say this muscle was tense and is now relaxing.
Yeah. That response is a great gift. Isn't that in part what learning some of the, like some of the Feldenkrais work and so on, the body work is about, is saying, okay, we live in this uptight, high stress society. And I can either be like that all the time with my shoulders uptight. And, you know, once a week I go have my spa day where somebody does a massage and relaxes my shoulders. But wouldn't it be great if I could do that for myself? On purpose.
Yeah. On cue. Because you're really conditioning it, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure that when you arrive at your Feldenkrais lesson, already everything goes, because you've conditioned now your body that, you know, as soon as you see Anita, everything relaxes. You know, you have situations like that you have conditioned these to, and every time you're in contact or you're in this environment, you either tense or you either relax.
So when I was doing the in-person clinics and I was getting on airplanes almost every weekend, it was really interesting because as soon as the airplane tires were on the runway, I would go into, I don't really want to call it sleep because it wasn't restful, but sort of this muzzy-headed dozing. And it was just fascinating. So the cue, because I could be alert, I could be reading a book, whatever. But as soon as the airplane was, and not just in motion, because they can be in motion for quite a while they're clearing the terminal. But as soon as the tires were on the runway, that was my cue to doze off. So Panda has a cue of you're next to a chair and there's all this context cues of we're going to be here for a while. She falls asleep.
But do you mean as soon as the tires were off the runway? Because
as the airplane leaves the terminal area and turns onto the runway.
The tires on the runway. Okay. Yeah. Instead of in the.
It hasn't taken off. Right. It hasn't taken off yet. It's at the terminal. It's stationary. Passengers are getting on. I'm awake. The door of the airplane closes. The stewardess goes through the safety briefing, which can put a lot of people to sleep, but I'm still awake. The airplane pulls back from the terminal. It goes around all the other airplanes. It travels for a little bit, however long it has to travel, to clear the terminal area. It may pause before it is given permission to enter a runway, but then it turns onto the runway. It's now in motion, tires on the ground, moving along there because it's not going to take off. It has to move along the runway to the end of the runway, turn, and then get clearance for taking off. So as it turns onto the runway and it's in line behind however many planes it's behind, I'm asleep.
So that's a good example of what comes before, because the cue probably in the beginning was takeoff, but then you anticipating the cue became what you're just describing.
Yeah.
What comes before.
Yeah.
And just let me pick that up. You just said you were anticipating, and yet the reaction to the anticipation is dozing off.
Yeah. And I always have a window seat because I like looking out and looking down and seeing the landscape. And particularly when I'm leaving from my home airport, I like to look, you know, what are we flying over? Oh, you know, are we going to fly over the barn? Am I going to see the barn from the air kind of thing? I always miss it because I'm asleep. You know, it's like, oh, well. So we can actively train. I mean, you have a young child. Did you have to teach her how to fall asleep? It's my understanding that you often have to teach children how to fall asleep.
I have not succeeded up to this day.
Well, she's only five. You've got...
And what I mean by that is the skill you were just talking about teaching Panda. So she still needs an adult lying next to her. Like, there is a cue. We probably taught her how to fall asleep next to a person that will, you know, cue her to fall asleep. But so what she still needs is someone else to move their own body into slow breathing, slow heartbeat, and really dozing off so that she can kind of copy that energy and also fall asleep. So we probably taught her how to fall asleep like that, but yes, what we have not succeeded to teach her is
contexts.
How to do that for herself.
Yes.
Like how to use other cues, either created by herself or like not with us in the picture, to fall asleep.
Yeah. So there's a lot in this conversation that may offer some clues as to how to build this to the next step so that she is able on her own to take herself into sleep. So that she's falling asleep when the airplane tires turn onto the runway. Yeah. Or, yeah, you know, sort of what comes before, or what comes before the thing that you want to click and reinforce is how do you move those precursors further so that you are getting the behavior of falling asleep at a different point in the chain. But that's a whole other subject. That's
right. I will have to think about that. But then, so one thing that just came into my mind that we didn't talk about yet.
Ah, yes.
That is talking about cues. So in the generalization I did, it was not just like different locations, for example, but I have done a systematic generalization of if there's no cue that you can directly connect with a behavior I want from you, then I want you to stand still. I'm not sure if I explained that in a way that
so
people
that
can understand it, but
that becomes a default behavior.
So
in the absence of any active cue, other active cue from me, where I'm saying to you, wake up and present an active standing still pose for me, or walk off, or do leg flexions, or whatever it is.
Svenja does indeed have a lot more to say about default behaviors. And Darian has a lot to teach all of us about the systematic, deliberate teaching of relaxation. One of the things that I very much enjoy about these podcasts is we get to share with you some master teachers. These teachers don't write books unless it is through their students. I am, of course, talking about the horses. There are horses that push us to be better. By better, I don't mean so we can win ribbons at some fancy show. I mean we have to develop our training skills just so we can stay safe enough to begin to build a relationship. These horses push us to go not just the extra mile, but the extra 10, 20, 100 miles and more. And it is these teachers that show us the details that really matter, not just to them, but that can make a difference across a wide spectrum of horse handler partnerships. They become superstars at core foundation skills, and they reveal to us just how crazily amazing Grand Prix standing still or Grand Prix targeting can be. These core foundation skills turn into Grand Prix foot care, or Grand Prix lining up next to a mounting block, or Grand Prix cooperating with a vet during a medical procedure. The list goes on and on. What Svenja has been sharing with us through this conversation is not a recipe book. It's not follow these 10 steps and you too will have Grand Prix standing in stillness. But wait, there's so much more. With just the addition of these 10 other steps, you too can achieve your dream horse. You know, we begin to sound like one of those awful infomercials if we think of it in those terms. No, what Svenja is sharing is her study of one journey with a master equine teacher as her guide. There is so much from this conversation that I think you'll find useful. And we still have 2 more episodes to go in this series. So for now, let me just remind you about the conferences that are coming up. Last week, I told you about the Dog Enrichment Summit. It's March 10 through 24, 2024. That's an online event run by Barbara Buckmeyer. She interviewed me recently for the summit. We talked about what I do to enrich my horses' lives and that might be relevant and doable for dog enthusiasts. To learn more about the summit, visit Barb's Facebook group, Enrichment Games for High Energy Dogs. Then the Portland, Washington Clicker Expo is coming up April 5 through 7, 2024. That's a live event. So quite apart from all the great presentations, it's going to be enormous fun to meet up with people I normally see only through a Zoom box. I'll be doing 4 presentations, including a lecture and a learning lab on balance. And by the time this particular episode goes out, all the spots that are left for the expo may be taken, but you may still be able to get on the waiting list. So if you're interested, if you're hoping you can still register, go to clickerexpo.com to learn more, and hopefully there will still be a spot for you. Next week, we'll continue on with default behaviors, and we'll see how Svenja uses the default of standing in stillness to clarify for Darian when she is asking for stillness and when she is asking for something else. So if you struggle to sort out your cues so your learner isn't trying to second guess what is wanted, this next part of the conversation will be of particular interest for you. So until then, train well and have fun with your horses.